financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Heller, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing okay. Someone's on vacation, so I feel like I'm a little frazzled this week, but, you know, I'm glad they're getting away.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we just finished a big vacation weekend, so I want to talk a little bit about, after hearing some complaints from people about, oh, I spent too much and gas prices are huge, and do you know what it cost me to rent a car? So, you know, vacation should be about enjoyment, not about worrying about the money. So
that is true, but I do know a lot of people that like go on vacation, spend whatever they want, and just say, I'll worry about it later. And then that part's not so great.
Yeah, that's pretty much most people, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what the point of taking a vacation is, to get away from all of that. And so it's easy to throw caution to the wind. But I'm going to talk today about some things that you can do to save money in ways that don't cramp your style, so you can actually enjoy the vacation and use that money you saved for other things. Maybe it's a great experience, or maybe it's paying your bills when you get home, whatever it is. Let's not waste money in places where we don't get any enjoyment out of it when we're on vacation.
Okay, sounds good.
So some of this will be about foreign travel, what happens if you're going abroad, and some of it will pertain to everything. And who knows what we'll end up talking about. But the first thing that comes to mind is something called peak end performance. Now, when you're making a vacation plan, especially if you're bringing your children and you're going to someplace exotic or someplace that you think, okay, we have to go now because the kids are aging and we will never have this opportunity again. And you tend to load up almost every day with all the experiences you possibly can. You know, we're going to go to Disney today. We're going to go to Epcot tomorrow. We're going to go to Busch Gardens the next day, whatever it happens to be. Okay. There is something called peak end performance. And it's a sports term as well, but it's used in this way to make sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck. In other words, what will you remember when you come home from vacation? Will you remember every experience you had 3 years later? It's not likely. But what you will remember is what you did at the peak. What was the pinnacle of your vacation? Were you going to go on a safari and, you know, shoot pictures of a giraffe? Was that the, the big deal for you on that trip? And what did you do right at the end? Believe it or not, just before you get on the plane, that's what you remember. I can remember personally being in Venice, Italy, and I wasn't there for very long at that time, and the vacation was okay. But I remember two things. I remember losing my favorite pair of lingerie at the hotel and not being able to get it back, oddly enough, because it was really a favorite. And I remember the experience just before we left. There was Acqua Alta, which is the moon is full and the water comes up too high in Venice. And you can't get onto the boats, right? They don't come in. And so this guy in a cigar boat came flying into the rescue, like in the movies, right? With all the guys on the gondolas, you know, cheering him in. And so we got on this boat and zipped over to the airport. And so believe it or not, that leaving experience is one of my favorite memories of Venice, despite the fact that I saw lots of beautiful things in Venice. So if you want bang for your buck, try and do a bunch of things that you like, but aren't hugely expensive. And maybe cut corners somewhere else, but pick one peak performance and one end performance. And those will be the big things, the things that you spend the most money on, because that's what people will remember 3, 4, 5 years.
It is really hard going on vacation. Like, we go to Florida every year and you just notice the prices inching up more and more and more. One trick that we do is, you know, my sister's got a timeshare, so we can use that. But for anybody else, like getting a hotel room with a kitchen or kitchenette, so you don't have to do every single meal out. Because it just, that kills you with the budget.
Yeah, it really does. And even when you're on vacation and you're eating out, one of the tips is to try to eat like a local would, right? Don't go to the place with the incredible view of the Eiffel Tower, because you're going to pay for that view. And you can go see the Eiffel Tower separately. Try to find a restaurant that's a little out of the way. Ask some locals, where's a good local place to eat? Doesn't have to be fancy, but we want really great food. And again, maybe you spend one really expensive dinner out somewhere if that's your peak or your end memory. And the rest of the time, you do what you're saying. You either try to eat like a local inexpensively, or you try to get something where you have some way to cook at the facility, or that you at least have a refrigerator. Like if I stay in a hotel, the first thing I ask for is, can you make sure there's a little refrigerator in my room? Because I could never eat all the meal, right? So I always get a to-go box right away, stick it in the fridge, and then, you have another meal for lunch or dinner or whatever. So
Yeah,
that's one
that's a
of the
good
things.
idea.
So if you're traveling abroad, the first thing to remember is I don't want you to pay those foreign transaction fees. They're 3%,
Okay,
right?
so how do you avoid that?
So you can avoid it by, first of all, checking the exchange rates before you leave. So you can do that at different websites. There's a site called xe.com that you can check your exchange rates at. And if the exchange rate is good here in the US, exchange money before you go. And we'll talk a little bit about how to get a good deal on exchange rates, but definitely do that. Use a bank branded ATM. Don't go to a little kiosk in Europe and try and get money out of it because you're going to spend more than you would if you went to a bank chain ATM. And avoid exchanging your money at an airport or a tourist site. Those are the
And a lot of
most
people do
expensive.
that, yeah, because they forget and then they think, oh, I'll just do it right there.
So, a little bit of a walk to out of the way somewhere, you'll get a better exchange rate if you have to exchange in the foreign country. But try and exchange money before you go. Now, when you're exchanging money, if you do it in large bills or you do it with a group, you can sometimes get a better rate. So if you're traveling with a group, don't go up individually and exchange your money. Have a little conversation off to the side. Decide on how much money you'd each like to exchange. Try and make it the same amount to make the math easy when you come back with the exchanged currency. And then go and exchange your money because you'll get a better rate with larger bills or with more money. So don't exchange $5 bills. Exchange 20s, 50s, 100s, right? Or exchange it in a group. Bring it as a group and do that. Now, when you come home, please don't bring home a bunch of foreign exchange. Foreign currency, because the banks here aren't going to exchange it for you. Try and minimize that. Spend whatever you're going to spend over there. Don't spend it just because you have it, because guess what? Most of the airports have a kiosk where you can donate that foreign currency to charity. So at least if it's just going to go to waste in your sock drawer, at least, donate it to charity. So, try and avoid that. It's just complete waste to spend that. Oh, there's one more thing. When you're checking out, a lot of the cashiers, the systems will allow you to choose whether you want to pay in a US dollar or the local currency. Always pay in the local currency, because if you don't, you're going to pay an exchange rate that's inflated because you're at a restaurant or you're someplace where they know they've got you, so they charge you a higher exchange rate. If you pay in the US dollar, even though that has to be exchanged, it's your local bank that you bank with that is making the decision about what that exchange rate is, and it's probably in your favor rather than, paying the extra exchange rate because you paid in US dollars at the restaurant.
So, do you think that you're better off? Because I think it's always hard when you're going to go on vacation and you have to do an exchange rate of figuring out exactly how much money you're going to need. So, do you think it's better to get more than you need and then have to do the exchange thing you said on the way back? Or is it better to get a little bit less and maybe pay a higher rate to get the exchange at some smaller place, like you were saying?
Yeah, well, I think, that's like timing the market. How are you going to do that properly? So you want to bring some cash, some minimal cash for when you need it, and some credit card or debit card. And one of the things you can do if you're worried about overspending is you can get a prepaid travel card that you can load with any kind of currency. So that might help you to feel more secure and to say, okay, I've loaded it with this much currency. I'm okay. I don't have to use it all. But it's on this travel card, so it's not all cash. I'm not worried about getting robbed and having my cash on hand. But I think it's probably better to, obviously it's better to plan it perfectly, but none of us will, right? But I think it's better to maybe have a little extra. You can probably afford to get a little extra at our exchange rates rather than pay for it over there. But if you get trapped, just go someplace local, away from the airport, away from the tourist traps. and exchange some currency there. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. So, what happens if you're traveling at home, or you're even if you are abroad? What about some packing tips? Now, what is the money doctor doing talking about packing tips? I haven't run completely amok where I must tell you how to do everything in your life, but there are some things about packing that will save you money, lots of
Okay.
money. And remember, we said this is about ways to curb your spending in places that don't cramp your style. Okay.
Is one of them the weight limit on your suitcase?
It
Okay.
is. It is. And it starts with your suitcase. You know, if you like to buy the gorgeous leather, hand-tooled, beautiful suitcase, you're going to pay for it, not just when you buy it, over and over and over again every time you travel. That can add up to 8 pounds over a lightweight suitcase before you ever put an item in it.
Okay.
Yeah. So try to buy a lightweight suitcase if you can. Then try and buy a checkable size so that you don't have to check your bags for airlines that are charging for them. And most airlines are now charging, you know, $25 a bag each way or whatever. By the time you get done with a family, you could have bought another ticket at least. So that gets trickier as the airlines get fussier about what you can travel with. I recently bought maybe a couple of years ago, actually. I bought a suitcase from IT Luggage. It's not that I'm doing a commercial for IT, but they're the only ones I could find that had this size. It's like a train case size. Do you know that size? It's slightly smaller than, so the airlines and the luggage people say this is a carry-on,
Yeah.
but it only fits on some airlines, like on the budget airlines like Breeze or Spirit or whatever. It won't fit. They won't take it under your seat. But this little
Okay.
cube thing is just a couple of inches smaller. I forget the exact measurements. It might be 17 inches or 16 inches or something like that. But it's hard shell. You can pack a ton of stuff in it, and it fits right under their seat. And so you don't
Okay.
have to check a bag. You can save money. Now, what do you do if, like me, you're going to Italy for 10 days and you've got that little cube and you like clothes? What are you going to do about it? You're going to roll your clothes up rather than pack them, rather than fold them, I mean. And use those dorky little things you see on TV called space bags.
Is it
You
where
know?
it like suctions all the air out?
Yes. Get some space bags. They're cheap. And
Okay.
try and get the ones that you can just lie on until you flatten them out. I'm sure I'm giving these real graphic images to our listeners, but literally, I will roll my clothes up, put them in the space bag, lie on them on the bed, like on my stomach or something, until I've squeezed almost all the air out of it, zip the little zipper stuck. And because they're flat like a little brick, you can put so much stuff in your suitcase. And you can even leave room for things that you buy when you're away to
I
get
was going
back
to
in.
say that is where I always go wrong. Like I'll always bring the carry-on because the same thing. I think I can buy something if I need it, but I'm not paying the extra fee. But then you get wherever you're going and you're going to get stuff to bring home to people. So then it's a whole other thing trying to get the stuff back.
It is. Sometimes people are going specifically for shopping. And so they'll pack a suitcase inside a suitcase so that they have a complete empty suitcase, but then they have to pay to bring it back. And you just have to
Right.
weigh, is it cheaper to ship the stuff or buy it at home or bring it in your suitcase back? So wow, lots of things you can save money on. And I think we're probably at break, right?
Yeah, we are.
So lots of things that you can save money on, and we'll talk more about it, but I just don't want people to be worried about the money while they're on vacation. And I really don't want them to come home feeling like they overspent. Instead, let's just trim some things that don't matter and move on.
Okay, we'll have more coming up, but first I want to get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with more with financial fitness with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Heller, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Rand, and we're talking about one of my favorite things, vacation.
Yeah, mine too. I don't get many of them, but boy, when I do, I really want to make it count, you know. So One of the things people have complained about a lot lately to me is the cost of a rental car. I can't
Yeah,
believe
it's
what.
gone way up. I was looking for Florida for coming up in November, and it's unbelievable how expensive it is.
Yeah, I mean, it really adds something to your fare. And you know, I'm going to gripe just for a moment about how much I miss a good travel agent. You know, we used to, this is the pet peeve of mine, that we now are forced to do things on our own and pay more for it. Like that sign about it's $25 if I do it, if you watch, it's 50, right? You know, you go to the grocery store now, you pack your own groceries most of the time, check out your own stuff. Half the time, the scanners don't work. Do you get a discount? No. You know, prices keep going up. Well, same thing is true for travel. It used to be great. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that we got rid of travel agents mostly. I don't know of a travel agent anymore. Do you? Do you know anybody?
No, I really don't. I mean, I see some travel sites, so I'm assuming people work there, but I don't know anybody that calls a travel agent to book a vacation now. They do it themselves.
Yeah, if there's a travel agent listening to this show, call me, please. I'd like to talk to you, and I would love to. They'd be an interesting guest to have on the show too. But also, I think that's a service that we undervalued, and now, you know, you do it yourself. It takes you forever. You're not sure if you got the right rates. And I remember in that trip to Italy I was talking about, I think the first time I went, I used a travel agency sort of thing. It was like a group agency. And so I got group rates on some things, but I didn't have to go on everything they had. And that still exists. You can find places that will offer you group rates for the tickets that you might want to use to go to the Coliseum or someplace, but you don't have to take the bus tour if you don't want to, or you don't have to do the flights, but you can get a deal on the hotels because they're using power of a group. And the same thing is true about group discounts like AAA or Costco or BJ's, where you might get a discount because you're part of a bigger organization. And so you might get a discount there. Some of that does pertain to rental cars. Sometimes you can get a discount on a rental car. But there are some other things you need to do to trim your expenses on rental cars. The first is avoid the prepaid gas. You know, fill up the car and bring it back full. Don't let them charge you $5 a gallon when you bring it back. It's
A
just
lot of
such a
people do
waste.
it because they know they're going to forget. You know what I mean? They know that they're going to forget and it's just for convenience. Everything that's convenient is more.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. In fact, that's true of the insurance also on the rental cars. So, you know, they always ask you, do you want the insurance? And sometimes they're a little pushy, like, well, if you don't have the insurance and you get into an accident or you injure somebody. So here's a big thing you can do before you ever leave for vacation, weeks in advance. Call your insurance agent and find out, hey, if I rent a car and I hit somebody, what am I covered for? Will it pay for the accident to the car, you know, the damage to the car? Will it pay if I hit somebody and injure them? And you might have a personal policy that covers you for liability as well. Even your credit card company that you use to rent the car may give you that insurance for free. So that's one of the things you can do is if you have several credit cards, you can figure out, well, which one am I going to use to rent the car because I get the perk of the insurance. And then you can feel comfortable declining the insurance. I never recommend that you just go not covered, right? But you can, there are things you can do. In fact, if you don't have insurance at all, or if you don't have comprehensive, you can ask for something called a loss damage waiver, which protects you. It limits your liability of responsibility if there's an accident. And you can check your personal policy to see if you're covered for liability. So don't avoid the expensive insurance if you can find that you're covered another way on a rental car. Even that contactless pickup, you know, where you get your keys out of a little kiosk or an app unlocks your car. Sometimes that is a money saver for people just because they didn't have to encounter somebody who was selling them on extras, right? So you make all your decisions when it's calm. This is like my tip about shopping where I say, give it a ride in your cart and go to the back of the store where nobody's bothering you and make your decisions. Same thing with contactless pickup. Yeah. Oh, two more things, I think, Jess. Shop many sites. You know, that almost goes without saying, but sometimes people say, I always rent budget. I always rent whatever, Avis. So shop several sites for the best price and try to be flexible. If you can change the time that you pick up the car, even by a half an hour, just try it out on the web. What happens if I pick it up at 3? What happens if I pick it up at 3:30? And you may find a better price by shifting a half an hour's time, which really isn't much.
Another little thing I'll add, just a little personal tip, is if you have kids and you're going and you're going to rent a car, it's almost cheaper to either pay the extra fee to bring the booster seat, or I mean, if they're booster seat size, or just run to Walmart, get a booster seat for $19, because otherwise, by the time you're done renting the car, it's like an extra $150 for the booster seats.
Wow.
Yeah,
See,
so that's something I've learned.
not having children, I didn't know that cost, but I do know somebody with a granddaughter, and they travel back and forth from North Carolina quite a bit, and they shipped up a separate seat. It paid for them to ship it up just to stay at the grandpa's house so that when they're here, they have a car seat. It's not even the
Yeah.
booster seat, it's a regular car seat. But
They add all those fees onto the rental and it just jacks up the price. You're like, what? Where is this from? And then you see it's the car seat. They charge you like a daily fee for it, for each one.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, anything like that that you can minimize. When you're traveling and you're using your cell phone, again, before you go, before you're where you're having to make this knee-jerk decision, ask your provider, do they provide free data when you're abroad? Can you get, or if not, get a local SIM card when you're over there to use the data. Don't just rack up these ridiculous cellular data roaming charges because they can be enormous. I remember one time I went to Canada and I had arranged this before I went. Oh, and check your bill when you come home. Let me say that. That bears repeating. So I arranged it all, as you might imagine, before I went. And when I came home, I reassimilated into life and went on with my daily chores. And one day my cell phone bill came in and it was something like $348. And it was usually like $50, And I called them up and I said, but wait, I arranged this. Oh, we don't have anything in our records. I had to really squawk. I had to know who I talked to. I had written it down, what time, plan on it. Another thing, talking about, planning on things like that that you have to pay attention to and be vigilant of, sadly, that you have to be your own steward and fight for yourself all the time now. But we're in a litigious society, I think, is the rental car. When you pick up your rental car, you will thank me one day for this tip. I promise you will. When you pick up your rental car, I don't care how nice the guy is that walks around it or the woman walks around it and says there's a scratch here and a ding there. You take pictures of the outside and the inside of your car. If it has to be one video, fine, walk around it, take pictures of the inside. Because if you bring it back and they say this wasn't here, you don't have any way of proving it other than that. Maybe you missed it when you were doing the once over. Maybe you did a contactless pickup, right? Like we were talking about. There's nobody there to go over it and say there was a ding here or a scratch there. So before you leave the parking lot, take pictures of it, video if you have to. I was just thinking about other generic things that you can save money on in your vacation. Being flexible is one of them, of course. If you can change your time a little bit here or there, or a day a little bit here or there, you might save some money. But try and travel on low season or off season if you can. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be going to the beach in the middle of the winter, but you might be going in May rather than June, July, August, or you might be going in September. And because you're off that peak season, you'll save yourself a pile of money. And the same is true if you're going someplace like a ski resort or something like that. Rather than staying in the highest priced city that's right there at the edge of the mountain, look for other places that might have ski in, ski out, facilities, but they're maybe not, in the middle of whatever, in the middle of the hottest city that you want to go to, right? They're not in Vail necessarily. They're maybe slightly out of there. So just think about that, or maybe even you go to another country. So instead of maybe going, if you're thinking of, let's say, a European vacation, right? Maybe you go to Slovenia instead of someplace else that, might be higher priced.
The other thing that I've been doing is using Turo. I don't know if you know that, where you're renting someone else's car. The only thing you've got to be careful with is, for me, it's like making sure that you put on the button that says free airport pickup and drop off. Otherwise, you have to kind of go off site. But I've been able to save money that way too, because the car rental prices are so expensive.
That brings me to an idea that I had not even thought to talk about today, but I've done it. There are house swapping things. So if you have a timeshare, like you can swap it with somebody else's timeshare, you can do it with houses as well. So if
It
you
was
have
a
a
whole
vacation,
Kate Winslet movie. Did you not see the movie?
oh, that's right. I forgot. That was a good movie, actually. I forgot
It
about that.
was. So there might be a cute guy involved. You don't know.
Yeah, he was a cute guy. both of them. So anyway, but wait, I digress. Okay. So yes, you can do that. You can swap your house. So you might have a house in Vermont. You can swap it with somebody for a week in Spain or whatever. Speaking of Spain and European countries, some cities in things, well, not that they're all European, but some larger cities like Japan or Portugal or Croatia will allow you to use Wi-Fi for free everywhere you go. So you
Oh, I
get like
love that.
free hotspots everywhere. So, you
Yeah.
know, you can factor in those kinds of things when you're trying to decide on where you want to vacation and how you want to do it. But I think probably just planning ahead instead of making knee-jerk decisions while you're away, you know, make sure you have enough money, make sure you exchange it at the right rate, make sure you planned out your packing, make a list so you're not forgetting a bunch of things. And spend that time while you're building up to your vacation on the enjoyment of planning for it. I hate to say this because, you know, I don't tell people, hey, go shopping. But that lightweight suitcase, especially if you buy it at a bargain store, can save you a lot of money over the years in packing and save your back as well. You know, and if you get that little cube thing that fits under the seat like I did, man, I used it so much. Everybody that sees one wants one. And they're all like, where'd you get that? They're hard to find, but they do exist. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
I like the idea too that, like, you know, you're not saying when you go on vacation, make sure that you've budgeted a certain amount per day, because you're right. Most people are going to go and be like, look, I've worked hard all year. This is my time to really enjoy. So, you know, it's nice
Yeah.
to still be able to enjoy, but here's some tips for saving some money while you're doing it.
Well, that's the point. I want you to spend money on the things you will remember and you love. But I don't, for instance, who goes to the airport and says, "Wow, that was really great that I overpaid in that short-term garage parking lot and I didn't get to go out to dinner because of it," right? Nobody does that. So prepay your airport parking. You know, you might even maybe valet parking sounds expensive to you and you think, "Well, I'll just park in the garage and I'll walk over there." It's probably the other way around. The valet parking is probably least expensive, and you can get deals on it, and they're so competitive. So if you get it ahead of time, rather than like driving to the airport and saying, "Where am I going to park? I got to park in this lot because I'm running late and it's more expensive, but I'll deal with it when I come back." Get a coupon ahead of time, prepay it, you know, get in their little van and off you go.
And the other thing that I do too is if you're going with other family members or a big family, we carpool, because otherwise you're
Yes.
paying for two people at the parking lot and it's a couple hundred bucks by the time you get back.
Yeah,
So
there's no
all really
doubt.
good tips. Now I want to go on vacation.
Well, I just have one last thing when you said if you're going with other people, and this is where I'm going to say, you know, I'm the little person on your shoulder here saying, don't let yourself get boxed in. Don't let yourself get goaded into spending more money because the other people you're on vacation with can do it. If it's not affordable for you, there's no shame in saying, look, you know, I want to go do that, but really, I think I'm just going to do this other thing instead. Or just flat out say, you know, we don't have the same amount of money to draw on, so I don't want to stop you from doing it, but just know that I don't want to come home to a pile of debt, and I'm sure you don't want that for me either. So I'm going to find some
Yeah.
things I can do while you're doing that.
That's
But
such a good point. We've talked about before having my sister in, because I bring her up a lot, but when we go on vacation, she likes to go out or do our meals like one meal a day. So it's, she doesn't like to spend money at restaurants, and that's true. Like, she's like, go ahead if you want to do it, but she doesn't want to be forced into spending that money every night. And that's true. People have different ideas of what they want to do on vacation.
yeah, and it's really hard to know that, especially if you don't discuss it in the beginning when you're planning the vacation. You know, somebody says, "Hey, I'm going to go to, and would you like to go?" And you say, "Yeah, okay." And then you feel obligated. And so then there's a plane ticket and you know, all the expenses that happen after that. You really do have to speak up for yourself and just say, "I want to go on vacation, but I don't want to spend the next 3 years paying for it."
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. All info is available up there as well. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial Fitness is back again next week with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today. This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
When I was diagnosed with the spinal cord tumor, a lot of financial damage had been done. This can put a strain on your marriage. Instead of going right to that place of, oh, panic, take more money out, we'll be all set. This time, we did contact Hug Your Money. So it was a whole different experience. I can't even put it into words. I mean, night and day. She's just invaluable. We don't know where we'd be without her and Hug Your Money. The recommendations, the strategies, and I have a final word, if you will. Her financial experience is priceless, but she's also a wonderful person.
Debt, budget, retirement. Hug works best when we work together. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hello.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good. What do we have on tap for this week?
Well, mortgage rates are through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, that's a bad combination of terms, I guess, but they are a bad pun. But there are ways to get a home with a really low mortgage rate still. And it's not a variable rate mortgage, but it's one that even many realtors aren't really aware of or maybe don't talk about very much. So I don't know if you've heard of it, an assumable mortgage.
I have not heard of it, but I'm going to assume it means taking over someone's mortgage. Is this kind of like a foreclosure sort of?
It's not like a foreclosure at all, actually, but it does mean taking over somebody's mortgage. So we're going to go through the details here, but you can buy a house if it has an assumable mortgage on it and still get that same low rate. So if somebody got their mortgage at 2.49% and it's the right kind of mortgage, mm-hmm. and you qualify, you can take over that mortgage at 2.4% and still just fund the difference. We'll go through the math, but just to get an idea of what that means. Let's see. So the kinds of mortgages that qualify are government-backed mortgages. So there'll be FHA, like Federal Housing Authority,
mm-hmm.
USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, or the VA, the Veteran Affairs, right? So you're looking for mortgages that are like that. Now, there are several startup companies that are starting to put out lists of these mortgages so that you can go house shopping for a mortgage or go house shopping by looking at the mortgage rate and say, well, gee, there are houses in my area mm-hmm. and I can get these mortgage rates and they're published. So I could go for this house at 2.49% or I could go for that house at 4.06%.
But why would the homeowner want to do that unless you were giving them a lump sum payment for like the equity? Is it because the house is going to get taken away if they don't? Or what's the incentive?
No, it's a built-in feature of the assumable mortgage. So why would a homeowner want to sell like that?
Yeah.
Because it's a sales tactic. If you're selling your house in this market, so that's a great question. Let's look at this logically, right? I have a house for sale and Jess wants to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for Jess to buy it, she's looking at a mortgage rate of what the current average is for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage right now is 7.09%.
Terrible.
It's high, right? Now, it's not as high as it was when I remember when I first started, in real estate and flipping houses and started in the financial business in general in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking mm-hmm. at mortgage interest rates, you know, in the 80s were up to 18%.
Wow.
And that's when these assumable rate mortgages became really coveted. So I would actually look for homes that had assumable rate mortgages. I would look mm-hmm. for an FHA home or a VA loan, right? Because the seller can use it as a perk. So if I want to sell my home and Jess wants to buy it and she's looking at, say, a 7.09% mortgage, her mortgage payment on my home, let's say it's a $400,000 home, that might be about $2,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But if she can take over my assumable mortgage, right? Maybe I only owe $300,000 on the house and it's up for sale for $400,000, right? Okay. So that's your equity question. I have $100,000 in equity. So why would a seller want to do this? Well, I could say, Jess, I have an assumable mortgage at a 2.49% rate, which you can take over, and I still owe $300,000 on this house. So that would bring your payment down to about $1,700. I'm using rough figures here. Mm-hmm. But instead of $2,500 a month, you'd be paying maybe $1,700 a month. There's a couple little caveats we'll go into. But then you have to do something about the extra $100,000 I want. That's my equity, right?
Right.
But getting a second mortgage for $100,000, even if it's, say, a home equity line or something at 9%, it's still going to bring your payment down lower if the first mortgage is low enough, because you're basically borrowing $300,000 in this scenario at 2.49% mm-hmm. and $100,000 at the higher rate.
Wouldn't you have to come up with that $100,000 though before you could take over the house? Like, that's, I think, where I would get caught is, okay, yeah, you could take a second mortgage, but you're going to have to give them that $100,000 ahead of time. They're not going to let you take over.
Right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And that's the big stumbling block for people. And so even a lot of real estate agents don't know their way through this, mostly because they haven't been popular since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But with rates where they are, this is a very attractive way if you can find one. And there were something like 12.2 million of these loans on the market last year. So they're out there. 23% of the loans, I think, were assumable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there. So, you know, yes, you have to pay that $100,000. Now, how are you going to do it? Well, a lot of times people are putting 20% down on their homes already.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take this $400,000 example again, not
so
to get too deep.
You have 80 grand.
That means you put 80 grand down. So you only have a $20,000 gap. Mm-hmm. So to fill that $20,000 gap, you go get a second mortgage. Now, it could be that you had to fill the whole gap. As long as the lender who gave the original seller the loan that you're going to assume,
mm-hmm.
accept a second mortgage on the house, and they usually don't care because they're in the first loan position should you default, right? The second mortgage can be put on the house even for a much larger amount. So you can still get into one of these with a fairly low down payment and keep your payment low by assuming someone else's mortgage if it's an assumable loan.
Can you get the first and second mortgage at the same time that you're applying for the loan from the bank? Okay, so then
yes.
You would have that money instantly to be able to give to them.
Yes. Now that's where it gets tricky for real estate people is, you know, organizing that. First of all, you've got to coordinate with the lender. And it's the seller's lender you have to go through because it's the seller's lender mm-hmm. that's holding that mortgage. So they have to approve you. So you have to qualify, but it's not impossible to do. I mean, I don't mean to paint this as a difficult picture. If you qualify for another mortgage, you'd probably qualify for this assumable rate mortgage. So they're going to qualify you, but they're going to ask you at the same time, just as if you went for a traditional loan, well, Jess, how are you going to cover this other 100 grand?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say, well, I'm going to put 10% down, $40,000 on a $400,000 house, and I still need another $60,000 to make this loan work. And so they'll say, yeah, okay, I think we can do the first mortgage as the assumable for $300,000. You're going to put down $40,000 as your down payment, and we're going to give you a second mortgage, or somebody else is going to give you a second mortgage for $60,000. Yes, for $60,000, and then that gets coordinated and happens at a closing table, just like any other traditional loan that might be done in what we've called an 80-20 split in the past. You probably remember me telling you that you might be able to get around private mortgage insurance by using an 80-20 split. In other words, an 80% first loan and a 20% second loan. Ridiculous as it seems, they don't count that as 100% loan to value. And so the first lender doesn't require your private mortgage insurance. Now, I've digressed a little bit here into another topic, but it brings me back to a point that with these assumable rate mortgages, you may have to pay private insurance. Now, on the FHA mortgage, you'll pay it every year. It's like 0.8%, I believe. And you'll pay it every year as long as you have that assumable FHA mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But on a VA loan, you pay 0.5% one time and no more fees. But there are caveats to these things. So, you know, I love it when you ask questions because I know that you're, and no insult intended here, but you're a regular person. You're not mm-hmm. a financial person.
Yeah.
And you think like a regular person. And that's what we want to do, is to help people in the general population understand what we're talking about, assumable mortgage. I mean, you're right. The first thing that came to mind is somebody getting foreclosed on? I can take over their mortgage. This isn't like, you know, taking over the payments on a car that's about to be repoed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that at all.
Okay.
It's that somebody got a mortgage at a really great rate. And if it is an FHA, VA, or USDA mortgage, it may have, probably has, this built-in assumable clause, which can turn out to be a great benefit. And we're talking not just to buyers here. Sellers have these mortgages and don't know it, don't remember that they can get money out of their home, sometimes more than they would have gotten on the regular market, because the interest rate is lower on that mortgage. And so somebody can afford it more easily.
No, it would seem to me that the banks would hate this, because then people are going to get a lower rate and they're not going to make as much money charging this 7.whatever%, right?
I just love the way you ask questions. So I don't know if the banks hate it. They don't have much of a choice. If you have an assumable mortgage, it's assumable.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody does have to qualify, but you inherently touch on the sticky point and you've done it again. If you have to go, I love that you do this. If you have to go to an assumable rate mortgage lender who wrote that mortgage in the beginning.
Right.
Right. They're the one who gave, in our scenario, my lender, ABC Bank, gave me a loan 15 years ago at 2.49%.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sell my house to you. And I want you to assume my 2.49% mortgage. Now, here's where it gets tricky.
Okay.
My loan servicer is going to make less money.
That's why I figured they're not advertising this.
Yeah, not just because of the interest rate. They're going to make less money having you assume my mortgage than they would if they sold you a new mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not that they intentionally drag their feet, but these mortgages are usually slower to close. So where a traditional mortgage might take 30 to 45 days to close,
mm-hmm.
an assumable mortgage might take 45 to 90 days to close.
Okay.
Still can be done, but that means that some sellers don't want to use that assumable rate mortgage as part of their sale.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really here today to talk about, not just to buyers, but to sellers, about the perks in using this. This is a win-win situation. It's good for both sides. If you can just tolerate maybe an extra 15 or 30 days to close your loan, you may well get more money out of your house, or get a better buyer, or just get the thing sold when it might not be selling because of a high mortgage rate in this market.
Okay, I've got more questions, and we're going to hear more about this coming up in the second half. Let's get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with much more with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a Hug coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. Hug Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. We're talking about assumable mortgages.
We are. I actually was thinking of having a guest today, and at the last minute, they couldn't do it. And so this teaches you to never assume anything and be ready for something else. And oddly enough, assumable mortgages are kind of an untalked about topic, I think, or less known topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're really important right now. And I think if rates continue to stay high, we will see these become more popular as they were in the 80s, as we were talking about when rates were really high as 18% to get into a mortgage. So You know, we've had lots of questions about, should I buy a home now? Should I wait? You know, what about the market? Are mortgage rates going to go down? And we never have a crystal ball. We can say, well, I don't think they're going to continue to go up for long because they, you know, they can't forever. People won't be able to buy homes. But yet the housing market is still, hanging in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to take some time for this to shake out. If you've tried to get any work done on your home, if you've tried to hire a contractor, you'll report that you can't even get three quotes these days because everybody is so backlogged and people are just happy that somebody showed up.
I mean, just talking about the news recently, Jones Library in Amherst, they got one construction bid and it was, you know, astronomical, but like one bid, you would think you'd get 10 or 12 for a big project like that. So you're completely right. You don't forget about trying to find somebody.
Yeah. And the scary part is that homeowners are just saying, and business people too, they're just saying, okay, do the work. When can you do it? And people are waiting 3, 4, 5, 6 months to get the work done. And they're paying whatever they can, whatever the people are asking because they can't get the work done.
Yeah.
I remember my favorite slogan on a truck that I ever saw on any sort of trade truck. I was in Florida where it really counted, I think. And I saw this plumbing company, local plumbing company, and on the side of their truck, I kid you not, it said whatever the name of the plumbing service was, I don't remember. And their tagline was, "We show up."
They probably get a lot of business that way because people relate to that.
They probably did. It was years ago and it always stuck in my head. Such and such a plumbing, we show up.
I was worried it was going to be something like we don't crack. And I was going to tell you, we're on the air. We're on the air.
Poor
plumbers. Poor plumbers. Pull your pants up. Okay. Sorry. I digress.
Oh, my gosh. The things we get into. Okay. So let's see. We're talking about buyers and sellers trying to utilize the built-in benefit of assumable rate mortgages. And if you came into the show a little bit late, what that means is if you have a government-backed mortgage on a home that you're looking to buy or sell, and it's an FHA mortgage for Federal Housing Authority, it's a USDA, just like the guys who stamp your meat, right? Department of Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, or a VA loan, Veteran of Foreign Affairs loan. If it's any of those three loans, it may, in fact, probably has this assumable clause built into the mortgage, and even sellers and their real estate agents often aren't aware of it. So if you're looking at a home, maybe one of your first questions should be, does this have an assumable rate mortgage? Because it's almost assuredly lower than the rates we have today.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you had said in the first half that there was, you know, a lot of lists that have all of these that are available. But I was going to say, if you happen to be, you know, just house hunting and looking at Zillow or wherever, you see a house that you think you might not be able to afford the mortgage, can you ask the seller, do you have this assumable mortgage? And then I'm assuming you'd have to get the seller to agree to it. But is there any downside for the seller to agree to this?
Not really, except that people are afraid of what they don't know. And so somebody will tell them, oh, your lender has to approve it and it's going to take longer to close. And it's not as smooth as a cash deal. But what is?
Right. So maybe somebody who's got a house that's been sitting on the market for a while would consider this.
Maybe, especially if they owe quite a bit on it. Now, this could be when we talk about a win-win situation. You know, if you have an assumable rate mortgage and you owe $40,000 on your house, the person buying it isn't getting much bang for their buck by assuming that small mortgage if your house is a $300,000 house, right? Because they're going to have to go get a traditional loan or cash for the rest of it. If you're in a situation where you have an assumable rate mortgage on your home, one of those FHA, VA, or USDA loans, then, and you owe quite a bit, let's say in that scenario we used where we had a $400,000 price on the home and a $300,000 loan. That still had that balance of $300,000, then you might want to be thinking about this, because the fact that someone can take over your $300,000 assumable rate mortgage and pay, you know, maybe $500 less a month or even more, depending on what the purchase price and the rate of the house is, even if they have to make up a little gap with some cash down or a second mortgage, it's probably still going to be a far lower payment for the person buying it. Then somebody taking a traditional loan. And what does that mean? That means you get your asking price or maybe close to it, or maybe even more than your asking price, because they can afford the payment. This is the kind of thing I complain about on a daily basis, about how people get, how Americans have, and maybe worldwide, have become inured to the fact that as long as you can make the payment, it doesn't matter how much debt you're carrying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I'm not advising against this. I'm saying this is a good way for you to buy a home if you can make it work, because that mortgage is assumable and it makes your payment affordable. I'd rather see you do that than, you know, max yourself out completely because the housing prices are high and the mortgage rates are high and you have to go and buy that house at that rate and it's really a stretch for you. I'd rather see you assume a lower rate mortgage as part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of startups. This will tell you how this is starting to become popular again, because they're out there, right? Mm-hmm. So there are startup companies doing this. One of them is called Roam, R-O-A-M. But there are several popping up, you know. And this is like Zillow, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you go to Zillow, if you've never gone to Zillow and you're listening to this show, type in Z-I-L-L-O-W and start looking for houses. You'll find, you know, a litany. You'll find your own house if you own one, and it will just say it's off the market if it's not for sale. So, that's a whole different thing about how you should update your own house on Zillow if the stats are wrong. Let's say it says you have 3 bedrooms and you have 4,
mm-hmm.
Claim the house and update it on Zillow. It will help you.
Okay.
That's an aside tip. Just pops into my head and has to get out there when I'm thinking of it. All right. So, Roam is a lot like Zillow. But it lists houses with assumable rate mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you some idea, I think last year, 6,000 of these loans went through last year, which was up 139% from 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And this year already, as of May, when we're doing this show, this year already, almost 4,000 of these mortgages have gone through.
So that's all across the country, though, right?
Yeah.
So this is still not really well known. Otherwise, those numbers would be much higher.
Yes. But if you think about something increasing by 139% in
that's
a
really
year,
good.
And now it's, I mean, we're 2/3 of the way there already, and we're not even halfway through the year yet.
Mm-hmm.
These are going to happen. This is going to become more and more appealing. So companies like Roam, they don't do this for free or out of the goodness of their heart, right? They're making money on this.
Of course, yeah.
But it's, you know, it's relatively low, I think. I think Roam charges 1% of the purchase price of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So on a $400,000 house, you're going to pay them $4,000. But they help coordinate the thing you were worried about in the beginning. They help coordinate the deal with mm-hmm. this assumable rate mortgage. And they talk to the lender and make it work.
If you're someone listening to the show and you have a house that you're trying to sell, and you just take a look after we talk about this and see you have an assumable mortgage, is there somewhere you can go to get your house added to these lists that you're talking about?
Well, that's a very good question. I would assume that you can contact Roam through their website. And there was another company too.
Because that might help a seller if you include yourself in that list, if you're finding. And also, I know that there's probably a lot of people that just can't stomach how high the interest rate is right now. So this might appeal to them because it's like you're still getting the house, but at the interest rate you want to pay.
Yes, exactly. I was trying to think of who that other company was.
ClickUp, Evernote, Notion.
So, you know, I don't remember the other company's names, but I had a couple in mind, but there are so many popping up that you just do a search on Google for mm-hmm. assumable rate mortgage help or assumable rate mortgage company lists, and you'll find these lists. And they are similar to the REO list that we used to see in the 80s when the government was taking over mortgages and putting houses up for auction
mm-hmm.
and they would list
mm-hmm.
all the properties that were available there. They're similar to those kinds of lists, but instead of it being foreclosure situations or distressed sellers, it's just somebody who happened to have qualified for one of these loans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember I told you there were certain caveats and you have to qualify for these loans?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of them is, I told you about the fees with the 0.8% yearly for FHA and 0.5% one time for VA.
Okay.
But if you are a person who got a veteran's loan, a VA loan on your mortgage,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you got a VA mortgage on your home, and you are looking to have somebody else assume that.
Right.
This is a little known caveat here, but if you're looking to have somebody else assume that, you can sell it to somebody who is not a veteran. Or to somebody who is a veteran. But if you sell it to someone who is not a veteran, you may not be able to get another VA loan for yourself until that loan is paid off.
Oh, that's a good thing to know.
Yeah. So, you know, people are getting very creative with these kinds of things. That might be worth doing if you have an agreement with somebody that they're going to assume your mortgage and pay it off in full in 3 years. And if they don't, you know what I say about real estate deals, you can put anything in a real estate deal that you and the other party can agree to. Mm-hmm. So you could say something like, look, I'm not going to be able to get another VA loan, but I'm all right with that. I'm going to move into an apartment for a few years or whatever, but you must pay this mortgage off. You must refinance this mortgage and have it paid in full one way or another in, let's say, 3 years, mm-hmm. or else this happens, right? Or else you have to pay me a bunch of money or, you know, whatever. You can make anything you want in a deal. Mm-hmm. Some people have gotten very creative by saying, look, I know I'm the buyer and I want to buy your home with a assumable rate mortgage. And you've got people who want to buy it with traditional rate mortgage, but my offer is good. You know, maybe I'm offering a little bit more money or maybe I'm offering better cash down or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you're leery of selling it to me because you think this assumable rate mortgage lender will drag us heels and it'll take, you know, 90 days to close this loan. And you don't want to wait that long, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Well, then you might say to the seller something like this. You can choose anything you want, but here's just an idea. You might say to the seller, okay, but I feel really confident that this loan is going to go through. I've talked to the lender. I know I qualify. The house looks good. We've had, you know, I don't think there's a problem here, but I'll tell you what, if it doesn't close in, say, 60 days, then I will pay your mortgage until it closes, or I will give you X number of dollars more for the mm-hmm. sale, or
you gotta offer a little
I will
incentive.
somehow I will sweeten the pot for you so that the seller says, well, okay, I guess my risk is pretty limited now, you know, and I can also call my lender and stay on top of them and say, hey, are you getting this loan through? Because I'm trying to sell my house here. But I think the sticky part there is that the lenders really do make less money on this than if they sold you a new mortgage. But I wouldn't let that deter me from looking for one of these mortgages. This is a lot of money that you can save yourself if you're really looking at an assumable rate mortgage.
Okay, I was Googling while we were talking as well, and it says that the competitors of Rome are New American Funding, FHA Pro, and Assume List. Are the other two?
None of those are the ones. So none of those are the ones I was thinking of.
Uh-oh.
So that tells you how many are out there.
Yeah.
There are many more. Yeah. And I think you're right. If you just Google this, you'll come up with them. I think there was something, the founders of DoorDash or somebody.
Yes. I just was reading that.
Tony Zhu. Yeah. So, I mean, everybody's into it right now. And I do think, you know, this is the train is leaving the station here where it's going to become
ClickUp. I'm going to get it. ClickUp, Evernote, Notion, none of those, huh?
No, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
It'll be two in the morning and you'll be like, this was it.
Yeah. In fact, it was Rome that received, Rome got like a $3 million investment from the people,
DoorDash.
Tony Zhu and that.
Yeah,
DoorDash, right,
DoorDash
exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sorry, it just escaped my memory, but whoever it was, you'll hear about him again, I'm sure. So I think, especially in our area, I think this is really important because, you know, I'm all for local lending and I'm all for people getting into their homes and all of that, but I just don't want people to overpay. And when you're talking about a 30-year mortgage mm-hmm. or even a 15-year mortgage, but you're talking about, you know, a 7% rate versus probably, you know, between 2.5% and 4.5% on these assumable rate mortgages, depending on when they were taken out.
Yeah, it's hundreds of dollars of difference in your payment.
It is, and thousands and thousands of dollars of difference in your interest over the course of time. Mm-hmm. And So I hope, you know, I hope that people hear this both on the buyer and seller side.
Right.
And understand this is something that they could look into and ask your real estate agent about it. And for realtors out there, if you're not familiar with these, maybe you've gotten into the game long after they were popular, please familiarize yourself with assumable rate mortgages because, boy, it could be a sales tool for you as well.
All right. Well, let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions on this or anything else financial.
Absolutely. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com for more. And we will talk again next week.
Great. Thanks, Jess.
All right. This has been Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Hey, Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today. This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Well, I tried another outfit out of Florida. Their help was to take my money, and you're on your own with problems that we create for you. This, it's different. It makes me more confident. The ads that I have heard on the radio were true. She's honestly, truly concerned that people's lives improve by getting a handle on their finances. I actually have more peace about where my finances are going from here. Yeah, it's like light at the end of the tunnel that's not a train coming your way.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.